The Leslie Marshall Show, the only true democracy in talk radio, of, for, and by you, the people. Live nationwide and streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Call in with your thoughts at 888-6-LESLIE.
Here to set you free on this Tuesday, just less than 24 hours after a historic vote in the state of Arizona. Not only is the first female senator from the state of Arizona going to represent the state and as a Democrat, but also a gay woman. And for people that don't think Arizona is purple, I don't know what colors you're looking at. I am glad to have somebody with us who knows about states, who knows about districts, who knows about votes, who knows about recounts. And he's a good friend, and you listen to him often. He's Mark Levine. He's host of The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine. He's also a delegate for Virginia's 45th District. He's a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. He actually wrote the legal challenge to the Supreme Court's Bush v. Gore case. On behalf of the Congressional Black Caucus, more than a pleasure to have with me my buddy and partner in crime, Mark Levine. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Happy Tuesday.
Hey, Leslie. Happy Tuesday. Always great to chat with you.
Always good to have you. And it looks like that blue wave is actually quite a wave.
I would say we began it in Virginia last year. I'm going to take full credit for it.
Okay, that sounds good. Good to know. I want to ask you a number of questions. First of all, I want to talk about two states. I want to talk about Georgia, and I want to talk about Florida. But let's start with Florida. It is the larger of the.
We were just talking about Arizona, and I was all happy, and then you had to put me in a downer.
I'm sorry?
I said we were just talking about Arizona, and you made me all happy, and now you have to bring up this downer of Georgia and Florida? Okay.
Oh, well, that's why we're having you on, buddy, because, you know, because of your knowledge. I'm sorry, our connection isn't as strong as I would like it be here.
I apologize.
No worries. I think we'll figure that out when we get to the break. Let's talk about Florida. First of all, because you wrote the legal challenge to the Supreme Court's Bush v. Gore case on behalf of the Congressional Black Caucus, what are your feelings on people who are comparing what's happening in Florida now to what was happening in Florida then?
Well, there's still some similarities. I mean, I know the basics of Florida law and the Florida law, which says that it's all done county by county. People forget that elections are not only not a national thing, they're not even a state thing. They're done by each and every jurisdiction in Florida. The main jurisdiction is the county. And so each and every county is counting their ballots. The Florida law has a very long wait time on absentee ballots, overseas ballots, military ballots. In fact, the deadline hasn't even passed yet. They can be submitted so long as they're received by Friday. So people could arguably still vote today, stick it in a Federal Express or some package, you know, that delivers worldwide, and still vote, which is extraordinary. But that's Florida law. It is what it is. My real concern is, I have lots of concerns, but the Senator Nelson's concern is that they are throwing out accurate ballots based on signature matches, which is actually really difficult to do because, you know, if you look at your own signature, Leslie or me or anyone listening to us, you kind of sign your name a little bit differently each time you sign. It's not exactly the same, and it really takes a signature expert to try to tell a forgery. It's really hard to do. It's not something that you or I or your ordinary county election official could do. And so I'm really suspicious of any ballots they throw out based on signature matches, because who would commit fraud and risk 5 years in jail as a felony by stealing someone's absentee ballot and signing for them? And then wouldn't the person whose ballot was stolen complain? It's just, it's virtually unimaginable that there's any fraud here. What it is, I fear, is real ballots being thrown out.
Okay. One of the things that bothered me is I'm sitting there election night. I was in Washington, D.C. at Fox, and I was on one of the many panels they would go to outside of the main panel in New York. They never got to us, but off the air, without mentioning names, there were two Republicans that looked at me when it was 93% of the precincts reporting, and Miami-Dade and Broward were still counting. They both looked at me, Republicans, and said, Gillum's got it. I had a tear in my eye, thinking not only does the Democrats finally, do the Democrats finally get to take over the reins in the state of Florida, but that the first African-American governor of that state would be soon stepping up to the podium. But when Andrew Gillum stepped up to the podium with 1% difference between him and Ron DeSantis, and not 100% of the precincts reporting, not 100% of the mailed-in ballots or provisional ballots counted, he conceded. Explain to me why anyone in left or right, anyone in their right mind would concede before everything is reported and every vote is counted.
Well, I think there's a tendency among some politicians. I remember Al Gore almost conceded in 2000, actually was driving there to deliver a concession speech when he was persuaded not to deliver that speech at 2 a.m. or 5 a.m., whenever it was in 2000. There's a feeling by honorable people that they want to do the right thing, that if they've really lost, the honorable thing to do is to concede and to show that, you know, democracy works and losers accept their loss. And so, you know, I mean, I've lost a political campaign. Of course, I lost it not by 1%, but I got kicked in a landslide when I ran for Congress. And I, of course, called and conceded. So I understand the impulse to concede. Obviously, in hindsight, it was the wrong thing to do. And Gillum has withdrawn his concession. And by the way, the concession formally does nothing. States still count the votes. And there's going to be a recount in Florida if it's under 0.5%, and it looks like it will be. So the concession actually doesn't matter other than to deflate your supporters but legally it means nothing.
And let's talk about what is happening in Florida. There are a lot of accusations of fraud, accusations of missing boxes reappearing, accusations by Jeb Bush, who appointed the Broward County Elections Commissioner to that position to get rid of her. And Rick Scott amazingly had no problem with her in her position for the two times he was elected and reelected, the two terms he served as governor. But now that he could possibly lose the Senate seat that he so very badly wants, now she can't do a good, credible, and reputable job. Talk to me about this woman. Talk to me about Broward County specifically and these missing, now reappearing ballots.
Well, furthermore, Rick Scott also appointed the Secretary of State of Florida, who's in charge of Florida's election system. And the Secretary of State of Florida, Republican loyalist appointed by Rick Scott, says there's absolutely no fraud, there are no missing ballots, that all of this is just a flat-out lie. So he's basically saying that the guy appointing him is lying. And then they asked Rick Scott, does he have any evidence of this? And he said, no, we should look for it. Well, we should look for evidence of fraud? You know, it's one thing to accuse someone of something, to say, aha, you're a murderer. Well, how do you know I'm a murderer? Well, we should look and see if you are. I mean, it's egregious. It's horrible. There is zero evidence of fraud. Now, Broward County is a large county. It takes time to count all their votes. It takes time to count all their overseas votes. And Broward County, unfortunately, that county official appointed by Jeb Bush, did make a mistake. It wasn't fraud. It wasn't corruption. It was another bad ballot. You remember the butterfly ballot, of course, in 2000, which famously caused 10,000 Gore supporters to vote for Pat Buchanan to deliver the election to Jeb Bush. Well, Broward County did it again, Leslie. Instead, what they did this time, they didn't do the butterfly ballot, but they put all the instructions on the left-hand column. And underneath the instructions was the senator race. And then they began a new column with the governor's race and all the other races. 4% of voters in Broward County voted for the governor, voted for the county commissioner, voted for, you know, the local, public auditor, but didn't vote in the United States Senate race. And just so you know, no other county in Florida was over 1%. Broward was 4% due to this faulty ballot design. So believe it or not, after Palm Beach County did this in 2000, another incompetent county clerk did it again, and that's probably why Andrew Gillum was so ahead in the polls, but he's heartened in Broward County due to yet another election design flaw.
We're going to take a break, Mark. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about Florida. We are back, we being me, Leslie Marshall, and he, Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine and delegate of Virginia's 45th District. We are talking with Mark about Georgia, Florida, the recounts there, some other election stuff. And one of the reasons is not just because Mark is a brilliant talk show host, a lawyer, delegate for the 45th District of Virginia, but he also wrote the legal challenge to the Supreme Court's Bush v. Gore case on behalf of the Congressional Black Caucus back in 2000. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the court decisions. There were two different decisions, correct me if I'm wrong, regarding Florida. One seemed to be favorable to Rick Scott, the other was not.
The one that was favorable was, a fairly small thing. Every aspect of the counting has to be transparent, and the court agreed with him, basically requesting that everything be transparent, everyone gets to see everything being done. That's traditionally done anyway, so you could say the court basically said, do what you normally do, and they are. So I'm not, that's the one he won. The one he lost is I think, more important. Although, again, it was kind of a meaningless lawsuit. He basically said that the judge should take custody of the ballots and the machines when they're, quote, not in use, unquote. But that's a really silly thing because they are in use. In a recount, what you do is you run the ballots through the machines. The machine tabulates the ones that are clearly marked. Undercounts and overcounts get spit out when someone doesn't vote in a race or, like I told you, all those races, 4% of Broward County, where no one voted in the Senate race, which I think is entirely due to bad ballot design, or in the event of an overvote, someone fills in something on both ovals, then it's looked at by human eyes to verify what the voter's intent was. And then if it's 0.25% instead of 0.5%, then every single ballot is looked at, which will take a lot of time. The Senate race is within 0.5%. Excuse me. The Senate race is within 0.25%. The governor's race is within 0.5%.
Last time I saw was, correct me if I'm wrong, it's 0.14, right? The difference,
that's right.
The difference is.
So that has to be a full hand count. The irony is Gillum would have gotten that hand count too and might even have won if it hadn't been for that ballot glitch.
Speaking of, at the end of the day, why wouldn't Scott and DeSantis want every vote to be counted? Because they could win by larger margins.
Oh, come on, Leslie. You're not that naive. Why didn't Bush want the votes counted in Florida? Because he knew Gore won. You don't want to count the... Look, if you're an honest person, you want the votes to be counted. But if you just want to win at all costs, well, they're ahead now. I mean, that's exactly what Bush did in 2000. He said, I'm ahead, stop the vote count, or as Justice Scalia wrote in Bush v. Gore, we cannot count the votes because to do so would damage the legitimacy of George Bush's claim to be president. Yeah, when you count the votes and you find that someone loses, it does damage the legitimacy. It's pure power. There's just no integrity there.
Gillum is less than half of a percentage point away from tying DeSantis.
Right, so he gets a lot, machine recount.
Right, and Broward County is typically, like Miami-Dade, more of a Democratic area. When I lived in Florida, they used to say the further north you go, the further south you get.
Let's look at the
gubernatorial race. What happens if, in fact, this recount shows that Gillum has won? One, how much does he have to win by? And two, get out your crystal ball. What do you think will happen?
How much does he have to win by? He has to win by one vote. He wins
one
by
vote.
One vote,
that's it. Just one vote. Okay. He has to win by one vote. So say he wins by one vote, or he wins by, 0.2 or 0.3%. He then what happens, or what do you predict Republicans will do? Will they fight if they can in any which way, shape, and form to prevent him from being governor, because they're not going to accept that, it would seem.
Well, let's do the recount first. I don't know. I think the recount will die because of that ballot glitch. I really fear that that is going to make the difference. But if he does win, he'll become governor. They could sue all they want. But if there's a recount, what are they going to sue about? You have to have a reason to sue. The Democrats, I think, have a good reason with this signature match system. I'm not sure what the Republicans could say. They even included 100. We know 172 votes were improperly counted that were done by email in a county in the Florida Panhandle. That's probably a Republican county that was affected by the floods. And they were accepted. They probably shouldn't have been. But you have to have a theory. You have to have a reason to sue. The Democrats would have to be throwing away some ballots. And generally, Democrats want every ballot counted. So they could argue maybe that Democrats were improperly counting some ballots. I don't know. They could sue. But at the end of the day, if Gillum wins the recount, Gillum will become governor. And if DeSantis wins the recount, he'll become governor.
Because of that glitch, and because it is Broward County that would favor Gillum, and because the glitch obviously can hurt the candidate that that district or county favors, would you say at the end of this, DeSantis, like I said, again, I'm just asking for your crystal ball idea. Do you think because of that glitch that DeSantis, even if it's a very small margin, will remain ahead?
I think so. I don't know. I don't have my crystal ball. But and obviously I'm pulling for Gillum. Gillum is a transformational character, and it's just it annoys me to know get out that Florida did it again. That they did a bad ballot, and again the Democrat lost. It just pains me. But yeah, I don't think Gillum will pull it out. But God knows I want to be wrong.
And okay, so let's talk about the Senate. Let's talk about the Senate race, which is even closer than the gubernatorial race. We're going to do that when we get back from this break. Don't go away. Mark Levine is my guest co-host, you might say, today. Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine, delegate of Virginia's 45th District. We're talking with him about these races and recounts in Florida, Georgia, and other places. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevine Talk, and the website MarkLevineTalk.com. Back after this. We are back with Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine, delegate of Virginia's 45th District and former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. As I mentioned earlier, He actually wrote the legal challenge to the Supreme Court's Bush v. Gore case on behalf of the Congressional Black Caucus. So let's talk about the Senate race in Florida, Mark. That's even closer. Again, getting out your crystal ball, with a recount, knowing the glitch in Broward, does Nelson say goodbye and Governor Rick Scott become a senator?
Well, we have to remember the glitch affected only the Senate race. It did not affect the governor's race. The governor was at the top of the second column. A lot of the reasons why people missed the Senate race, and again, 96% didn't miss it, but 4% did, higher, four times higher than in the other county, is because a lot of people assumed that the governor's race would be first on the ballot, and they thought the Senate race was part of the instructions. They didn't read their ballot carefully. So the governor's race was not affected by it. And that's why the governor's race is much closer. It's a difference of 13,000 votes rather than 33,000 votes. And I think that 20,000 vote difference is Broward County. That is to say that I think Bill Nelson has a real chance of remaining Florida's senator. We have to look at the overseas votes coming in. I don't know how they'll go. Broward and Palm Beach and Miami-Dade are traditionally Democratic counties. On the other hand, overseas people, if they're military, tend to be Republican. On the other hand, there's a lot of overseas Democrats. There's a lot of Jews living in Israel, American Jews, and they'd be from southern Florida, and they would be more likely to vote for the Democrats. So I don't know how they'll skew, but they may very well skew differently from your average Broward County, Dade County voter. I'm not saying Nelson's going to win, but I think he has a real chance to win, particularly if he wins that signature match lawsuit. That, I think, will make the difference. If he doesn't win that lawsuit, I think he's got an uphill battle.
Let's take some calls. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. And we go... 602, Michael in the Bronx on line 2. Michael, thank you. Welcome. Question or comment?
Hi, Leslie. Hi, Mark. You know, let's cut to the chase here and expose some of the frauds going on here by these Republicans. First of all, they're the ones that always want to suppress the vote in these heavily Democratic counties and got the gall to afterwards saying, you Democrats lost because you didn't get the vote out. We've been getting the votes out. You guys been suppressing them, and now you don't like it that the courts are saying, no, every single vote must count. And that leads to the second despicable act by Mr. 45, who says that even the military votes cannot be counted, those are voting overseas. So let me say this, that you, Mr. Trump, and your followers, your base, you are no longer in position to be talking about supporting our veterans, supporting our troops, when you're going to diss them like that.
Hallelujah. Very well said, Michael. Mark?
I'll just add that, remember that when Trump says, stop the vote count, count what they're done now, don't count those overseas votes, he's basically saying that if you serve in the military, you should lose your right to vote. I mean, veterans groups need to recognize that their Republican president is saying veterans shouldn't have a right to vote. That's a pretty extraordinary thing, even though I get they're just trying to win an election, but they're clearly throwing veterans under the bus.
Thank you. I want to mention something. Ari Berman tweeted today on Twitter, I still can't get over Trump refusing to honor fallen U.S. troops in France and Arlington, and then tweeting on Veterans Day yesterday that he didn't want overseas military ballots to count in Florida. I wanted to mention that and also get your take on that, Mark, being that you just mentioned the military, who, as you are right, historically vote more Republican. How ridiculous for he not want the overseas military ballots to count in Florida when that could actually help his two candidates there.
Well, he can't make a distinction legally between the overseas military ballots and the overseas non-military ballots. He doesn't want any more vote to count because his guy's ahead. It's interesting, though, when he found out that Sinema had won the Arizona Senate race, he said, wait, no, do a recount. So he wants to keep counting in Arizona because his candidate lost. But his candidate's ahead in Florida, so he wants to stop the vote counting. It's silly. It's not going to do anything. They're going to count everything. But in the case of the military, he's basically saying, yeah, I'm willing to take away veterans' right to vote if it means my guy gets into office. And again, that tells you the lack of values of Donald Trump.
Anything else that we should say about Florida before we move on to some other areas like Georgia and some
other
places
in the country?
I want
to move on to Georgia because Georgia is the real embarrassment to the nation.
And let's talk about Georgia, because Georgia goes beyond glitches and
right.
recounts. And Georgia heads into the territory of voter suppression. Bring people up to date as to what's going on in Georgia and why Stacey Abrams is not being a spoiled brat loser who can't accept defeat, but actually has a very valid claim.
Yeah, so Florida made mistakes. Florida had ballot glitches. Florida was negligent. But Georgia is intentional, Jim Crow, full-on voter suppression of a kind that's really downright evil. I don't know what other word to use. Georgia, from the get-go, you had Brian Kemp, who is or was the Secretary of State. So he was in charge of the election system that featured him as the gubernatorial candidate. So it's kind of like saying that an umpire is the leading first baseman, and he's also the umpire. And he says, no, I'll be fair. He's out. No, he wasn't safe. I tagged him in time. I'm the umpire. I'm also the first baseman, right? Baseball fans would never allow such a thing. You can't be the referee and a player in the game. But in Georgia, it's legal, and he was. So as the referee, he did his best to remove hundreds of thousands of mostly African-Americans from Georgia's voting rolls and just recently removed some 50,000 based on this, again, exact match signature. Not just the signature, but also he looked at the name. For example, if you're a woman and you have a last name that's connected to your husband's last name with a dash, and sometimes you write it with a dash, and sometimes you write it without a dash, that would be enough to throw you off the voting rolls. So it tends to harm people with unusual names. It tends to harm women. And it definitely tends to harm African-Americans and Democratic voters. The court said he couldn't do that. So on Election Day, well, let's see what happened on Election Day. On Election Day, the average white voter waited about 15 minutes. The average black voter waited about 3 hours. It just turned out that there weren't enough polling machines available, that Brian Kemp, the Republican candidate, didn't supply enough voting machines in heavily African-American areas. And so lines went 3 to 4 hours around. Many of them didn't even have power cords. He didn't supply the power cord. They had to go out and get power cords, and people waited 4 hours. And you know what? If you have a job and you're on the clock and you could get fired, many, many people leave the lines and can't vote. So this is all very intentional, very much against the Voting Rights Act. But, of course, the Supreme Court largely disemboweled the Voting Rights Act under Republican Supreme Court. But here's at the end of the day, here's the hope. Stacey Abrams does not need to beat Brian Kemp in this election to keep fighting. She only needs to keep him below 50%. Georgia, unlike Florida, has a 50% plus one rule. In most states, the plurality wins. You win 49 to 48%, you win. And in Georgia, there's this tiny libertarian candidate that got 1% of the vote. But if Stacey Abrams keeps Brian Kemp to under 50%, and I think he's at 50.3% now, and she's like at 48.9 or something like that. If she can keep him under 50, there's a runoff in Georgia, and then we get rid of the Libertarian candidate. And hopefully, people will be watching this time, because Brian Kemp is thankfully, finally, no longer Secretary of State. He did resign his office, he said, because he wants to prepare for being governor. And we can at least have, it's not a neutral guy because he's appointed by Brian Kemp. At least it's not the same as the candidate running the elections. And she could win a runoff. You know, we've had special elections where the Democrats were more motivated than the Republicans. Connor Lambs is a clear example in Pennsylvania. And if she can keep him under 50, she could well win a runoff. So this race is not over.
I have to say that I really thought, with the changing demographics of Florida, the number of African Americans that it would seem an African American candidate can get out to vote, like Barack Obama, compared to past elections.
There's one more thing that thankfully this will be the last Florida election where it matters. But some 1 in 6 black men in Florida can't vote because they're ex-felons. And you might say, wow, blacks are that more criminal than whites? The answer is no. The answer is that our drug laws are enforced more against blacks, way more against blacks than whites, particularly in Florida. Same percentage of blacks smoke marijuana as whites, but the police go after the blacks. They do racial profiling, and drug deals are made in the street rather than a private home. So the upshot is that 1 in 6 African-American men have a felony. Now, in 40-plus states in the United States, you do your time. Some allow you to vote while you're in jail, most don't. But once you're out of jail, they all give you your rights back. Well, Florida is one of the very few states that never gives you your rights back. You could have served a felony at age 18, and you're now 83, and they still won't let you vote. The Amendment 4 in Florida, which gives ex-felons the right to vote automatically upon release from prison, that is amazing, because that won more than 60%. It won 65% of the vote. And you need 60% for constitutional amendments in Florida. But it passed it with flying colors. So two-thirds of Floridians actually voted for this. And I believe that when ex-felons are allowed to vote, that's going to change Florida in the future. First of all, it's the right thing to do, because everyone should have a right to vote. But furthermore, yeah, it'll help the Democrats, I think, because I think there are more of our voters than theirs in that pile. And that means that Florida may go from a purple state to an indigo state, a state that, you know, is leaning blue. After all, Barack Obama won Florida without this help. So I actually hope that this will be the last unfair election in Florida. And, you know, we may have Florida in the future as a reliable state. Let's cross my fingers, hope that happens.
Is Arizona more becoming more purple, or did Sinema's message of common ground resonate with people that are tired of the vitriol left and right?
Yes and yes, both. You got to remember, Arizona is the home of John McCain and Jeff Flake. And John McCain was the most eloquent Republican
never Trumper of any of them. I don't know whether it's because he's an honorable man, a veteran, or because he was dying, but for whatever reason, John McCain did not hesitate to tell Donald Trump what he thought of him, and it wasn't pleasant. And you know, and Donald Trump didn't hesitate to basically insult really one of the few American war heroes we have left, you know, on the public stage. And then Jeff Flake also, and Jeff Flake's a solid conservative, actually. So is John McCain, but they don't like Trump's racist rhetoric, his anti-immigrant rhetoric. They don't like his lies. I mean, I'm a liberal, they're conservative, but Jeff Flake, John McCain are and were honorable people. So I think that had an effect. And then you had the fact that the Republican candidate in Arizona, Martha McSally, drew herself ever closer to Trump to try to pull out the Republican base. And I think there are a few people, maybe not many, but enough to make the difference, who do not like that rhetoric. That being said, yeah, the demographics are pushing Arizona our direction. You may recall Hillary Clinton thought she had a chance to win Arizona. And where Arizona goes, Texas follows in 10 years. You know, go Beto. We haven't seen Democrats.
And speaking of, for people that say Beto was, you know, he lost, it was a defeat. It was a 3% difference in a state as red as Texas. I thought that was pretty damn victorious.
Yeah, Texas is never close. Texas is the Republican electoral anchor. You know, Democrats have New York and Illinois and California, Florida, we fight over all the time. But Texas is the second largest state in the United States in population, and it's the Republican anchor, and yet it's a majority-minority population, and that's because Latinos in Texas, Latino citizens, don't vote. They don't vote in near the numbers that whites and blacks and Asians, everyone else does. We can argue about why that is. But I think Texas is the future. I've always believed Democrats, Texas is the great dream. We always wonder when will be the day when Texas flips. And when Texas flips, Republicans are just not going to be able to be racist anymore. They're not going to be able to be hating immigrants anymore. Now, Texas hasn't flipped yet. We had the very best possible candidate we could have in Better or Work. They had the worst candidate they could have in Ted Cruz. And we still lost by 2-3%. But Arizona has now flipped. And I think Texas is 5 or 10 years away, but mark my words, by 2028, we'll get Texas.
Well, you know what? More women voted, and that brought out more women to vote this time in the midterms, unlike when Hillary ran. But I think more Hispanics coming out to run, although we've had more. We need even more, and the Hispanic population, I agree, has to vote. Mark, always a pleasure to have you with us. Sorry, we got to wrap it up. Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine, delegate of Virginia's 45th District, and former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. Please go to his website, marklevinetalk.com, M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E, with an E for empathy, as he always says, marklevinetalk.com, and on Twitter, follow him at Mark Levine Talk.